Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip.
In the year 1831, biologist Charles Darwin began a fateful journey on the HMS Beagle. On that journey, Darwin formulated the controversial theory of evolution, which has impacted society down to this day.
Our goal is to punch holes in that theory, so we'd like to welcome you to
Sink the Beagle.
Fire one, Captain.
Attaboy, John, that was good shooting.
I like shooting that old beagle in the belly every day.
I'm Stan Hudson.
I'm John Kurlinski, welcoming you to another fun-filled episode of
Sink the Beagle, where we take a lighthearted look at some of the very serious issues of creationism, evolutionism, where we came from, which we think impacts our ideas of where we're going.
I think that's what we like to do, but we do it in a lighthearted manner, meaning that we don't always take ourselves seriously. Yeah, well, actually we do, but we don't take, we do not claim to have all knowledge on all issues. We
John,
claim
I don't
to
take
be,
you seriously. Yeah, I hope you.
Thank you very much, Dan. I know.
In the spirit of this.
Mutual.
Oh, no.
The point is that we are not, quote, experts in the sense that we have all the details of biochemistry.
We have enough knowledge to be dangerous. And we use that. We wield that here regularly.
We wield the club of danger very willfully and joyfully. But the point is we do believe we understand the issues and the arguments in enough information to make at least some, ask some good questions. You know, that's what it really, really boils down to is sometimes you have to be able to ask the right question, like, where did that come from? Or how come?
Or would you marry me?
Would you marry
me?
That was a good question.
That was a good question to ask our wives. Yeah. And fortunately, we got answers to those questions.
They said yes.
Praise the Lord.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
We are happily married men.
We are. Now, asking the right question, John, will definitely give you the answer you're looking for. You have to ask good questions to get good answers.
Yes. If you don't, you will end up stumbling about through life. You know, a lot of times history, actually part of science came about from asking
great questions.
It started with a great question, but it came about with some stupid ideas that led about earlier, actually, because they asked some good questions.
Yeah.
But they didn't go about the right places to find their answers. One of the places, so just as important as the question is, where do you go for an answer? An example might be, is you could be standing at the top of the Kaibab Range, mm-hmm, in northern Arizona, mm-hmm, overlooking this vast display of sedimentary deposits.
Yes.
And this little tiny ribbon of a river a mile below you.
Way over, down there.
And you can say, how did this canyon get here?
That's right.
That's the question.
That is the question. A Grand Canyon was a grand canyon and a grand place to ask that kind of question. The question we're going to ask and pose to you today is, as we look at geology, the record of the formation of the earth, as we examine the crust of the earth, there's no question but that it's been formed over time, called erosion, the factor that's changed the earth through the wearing down. And a question to ask ourselves today, John, is, did these features, like the Grand Canyon, get formed quickly with lots of water or over long periods of time with little water?
Yeah, I guess lots of water over a short time or little water over a long time. In other words, is it right to begin to answer to that question by saying, I need to measure current processes and determine what's the current rate. And then we'll adjust it with some other things we need to take into consideration, all the variables such as seasonal flooding and maybe an extra log floating down and hitting the side and knocking more dirt loose. And
Someone spitting into the water.
And then we're going to measure the length carefully and get a good measurement. And then we're going to extrapolate our data. And in fact, when that's exactly what happened in many ways, to come up with this theory called uniformitarianism or gradualism, as it became known, which was really the foundation for what a big lauded word here. Another one is called philosophical materialism.
Okay, and material is behind all that we see. Material gets, but material. Material
in
comes from material.
In the beginning, helium.
No. In the beginning, helium. That's exactly right. Now, this comes from this thinking, which we'll call gradualism or uniformitarianism, which sounds to me very religious, like, you know, baptism or some denomination. Hi, I'm a member of the Uniformitarian Church. Oh, hello. Nice to meet you. Uniformitarianism sprang from, in particular, a couple of English geologists, Hutton and Lyell,
We mentioned last week.
We mentioned Lyell, especially last week, who very much influenced Charles Darwin's thinking as to long age.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, these gentlemen formulated the thinking that what we see now in terms of processes are all we have in terms of processes to explain what has happened in Earth's history. In other words, what you see is what we've had.
And therefore, it's what you get.
And that's why you get what you get.
Yeah.
And so a canyon is formed by a river because that's the only thing we see going on there. There's a river. It's a canyon. The canyon got there from that river.
Well, thump about that.
That's it. And there's no other answer.
unless you have a more potentially open mind saying,
open mind.
Some people would say, you know, when you start observing these things, you have to start taking into factors beyond your scope of ability.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we weren't back there back then when it started.
That's right. A good question would be, are there other ways this could happen?
That'd be a very good question. Have we explored all possibilities and probabilities?
Yes.
Or do we have some favorite ones we believe are so we're going to prove it so we don't look like fools and idiots and stupid people?
Well, now, I'm a Christian, and therefore that means I'm bigoted, biased, and narrow-minded. So when I would come to the Grand Canyon and look at the river there, I would say, okay, let's do a calculation. So much water, a bucket of dirt, you know, every year. And how many buckets does it take? Okay, this is going to be so many years. Oh, my goodness, we're going to get into millions of years here. Now, as a Christian, I would say that can't be because the Bible doesn't allow for millions of years.
Now, the next question I have is an interesting history, though. Before we dive in that history, I want you to go back.
Yes. Okay.
When they first dated the Grand Canyon, how many years did they put into that column that's exposed there in the Grand Canyon?
Tens of thousands of years.
When they first did it. When they began to date the canyon, they were dating it hundreds of millions of years, were they
that
not?
Where they are now.
They're not there now, though. They're hundreds of millions now.
Yeah.
Now when you go, it's 5 million. That's what I just heard.
Oh, 5 million years old.
They've reduced the age of the canyon to 5 million years.
Well, right.
Years.
Okay. The question I'm thinking the formation of the layers,
which
is still at hundreds of millions of years, the layers. Mm-hmm.
The layers.
But the forming of the canyon, yes, is down to 5 million.
But they used to have the forming of the canyon as hundreds of millions.
That's right. My tens of thousands reference was back in the 1860s when they first measured it and said, my goodness, this canyon must have taken 10,000s of years.
Yeah.
But it's changed.
But in other words, science has changed as they've allowed more data
to
be applied to it. But that's not always been the case that science has done.
No, that's exactly right. And so, you know, again, as a Bible-thumping Christian, when I got that answer that, my goodness, this is going to be millions of years old, as a Christian, I would say, or should say, wait a minute, the Bible says no to that idea. Let me look at this in a different way. Is there a different explanation for this? And as I'm reading my Bible, and I do, I read Genesis 6 to 9, and it says something about
flood. And we say flood that way because that's a word that for many, many years, in tribute to geology, they did not like to mention. Once they embraced gradualism, long age and slow processes over many time, little water over much time thinking, they didn't want those big floods coming to rip-roar through.
Ever since the divorce between the church and science.
They couldn't talk about the flood anymore.
They can't talk about the flood. That sounds like the Bible account.
Yes.
And yet, the Bible account does seem to say that lots of water, I mean lots, we're talking buckets and lots of water.
Lots of buckets.
came across the surface of the earth and completely destroyed and reshaped, reformed the crust of the earth.
And it wasn't just water, too. It was also talking about various other forces, upheavals, subductions, and other things that are going on
all kinds of fountains of the deep.
But you know what, Stan? You know what? There are some scientists who did, I think, and still tried to the best of their knowledge, be open and honest with the information. And one such scientist actually helped explain the ground and the geology and the geography right outside our window here where we were recording in Spokane, Washington, where we're recording today. And that was a guy named J. Harlan Bretz.
Now, J. Harlan Bretz was a professor here in Washington who was a geologist. And he, in his observations, we're going now back to the 1920s and 30s.
Yes.
In his observation of just the Eastern Washington, all the way out to western Montana.
All the way down to the coast.
All the way down to Portland and the Columbia River Basin, looked at all of this and said, you know, there seems to be pretty good evidence that something big happened here. And we're not talking about millions of years and little bitty trickles of water causing everything. There's evidence of a
catastrophic flood.
The more he did his research, the more he became convinced that that's what happened. He looked at the dry falls in central eastern Washington here.
He looked at the Camas Prairie and found giant ripple marks.
Ripple marks.
He looked at the canyon and all this and the big gully out in the Pacific.
That's right.
And he looked at all the
Columbia River Gorge, and he asked himself, could this be done over a short period of time?
The huge erratics and the radically carved landscape.
Huge erratics. He's talking about something. He's not talking about tall teenagers when he says huge erratics.
Yeah.
What he's talking about.
Like your son and mine.
What he's talking about are huge boulders that are just sort of laying out in the middle of nowhere. How in the world did they get there?
Whose geological does not match.
Comes from many miles away.
Yeah, it doesn't match the local geography around, geology around it.
How did these rocks get
here? The question, though, is I'm assuming that when J. Harlan Bretz brought this information to his scholarly peers, they just said, J. Harlan, you are a wonderful man. You discovered such wonderful truth. We believe you. Didn't that what they said?
Well, of course, because they're open-minded scientists, and that is a way that they always respond to new data and new ideas. Actually, not.
you mean they didn't just embrace him in the 20s and 30s and 40s?
By 1945? And 50s even, yeah.
No, how long did it take him?
It took him, and I'm trying to remember now the exact date, but something like 40 years before they accepted it. And the last kind of nail in the coffin in terms of narrowing it down was when he got some good
satellite
aerial photography, aerial views, and the pictures show clearly ripple marks. And I mean, when they saw that, they said, well, it's just like the ripples on a beach.
But these were giant ripple marks that
were huge.
10 stories, 11 stories tall.
So,
huge sandbars.
They gave it to Dr. Bretz, and is actually in about his last decade of his life, said that, yes, catastrophism does answer the data better in many places than gradualism does.
And this is not necessarily global catastrophism. This was the draining of Lake Missoula over 48 hours when an ice age dam broke, which we would relate to what we'd call post-flood Pleistocene depositional activity.
That's right, post-flood.
An
inland sea that was still plugged up and hadn't drained. In other words, additional draining needed to be done from the North American continent. When it finally got going, it cut through, you know, western Montana and the top of Idaho and eastern Washington and northern Oregon all the way to the coast, cut the Columbia River.
Cut a 300-mile canyon into the mouth of out the Columbia River down in there.
That's right.
Which was a cut. It's not like the river caused that canyon.
It was a giant gully wash. Gouged out right from Portland.
And the interesting thing is that now Bretz has been accepted his catastrophe. He brought catastrophe back into geology. And at the end of his video, a series that we did, he even starts musing, saying, I wonder if we ought to relook at something like the Grand Canyon.
Aha!
Ooh, another big gully wash that in many ways resembles, because when you look at the Grand Canyon itself, there are many side canyons that do not occur.
That are perpendicular to them.
That run perpendicular, that do not occur under normal river small flowing conditions. It only can occur with lots of water
over a little time. Little time. So again, the great question to ask, John, is it going to be, does the data better figure into an equation that says lots of water, little time, or little water over lots of time? And I'd like to share
Give me a torpedo text.
Okay, from 2 Peter 3:3-4. Know this, first of all, that in the last days, mockers will come with their mocking, following after their own lusts, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all continued just as it was from the beginning. Sort of sounds like gradualists.
Sounds like they need to ask some different questions.
That's right. They'll get better answers if they do.
Thanks for listening to Sink the Beagle. If you have comments, questions, or requests for Dr. John or Dr. Stan, you can email them at hudahoe@mindspring.com. That's hudahoe, H-U-D-A-H-O, @mindspring.com. Be sure to listen in next time to Sink the Beagle.
So join us here each week, my friend. You're sure to get a smile from seven stranded castaways here on Gilligan's Isle.